Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in David Ubben from The Athletic. David, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming on with us. We appreciate it. So, David, we've had, as you can imagine, a lot of fun with this Jimbo Fisher Nick Saban feud that has taken place, maybe the greatest press conference of all time last week with Jimbo Fisher. What do you make of this situation between those two coaches? And let's just start with Saban's comments on the matter. What did you make of the way that Nick Saban handled this at the event that in Alabama the other night?
Well, I think there's a lot of coaches who feel like he does. And I think he, you know, it's hard to not think that in a lot of ways he feels threatened because he's built these things up and built in these advantages that he has over the last decade. And now all of a sudden, you know, money has entered the equation as a great equalizer. So, you know, we can talk about the fairness and equality and all those things that players finally getting money can do. But ultimately, you know, I think it's hard not to think that a lot of this comes from a place of frustration and anger. That, you know, he feels like obviously these schools that are paying are taking shortcuts. But again, you know, this is where things were headed. But, you know, a lot of coaches feel the way he does. And I think that's, you know, a big part of this is that he's Nick Saban and he can say sort of what he wants to say. But at the same breath, you know, he's complaining about these things. Like Jimbo pointed out, I think quite fairly, he's complaining about these things in a room full of, you know, boosters and business owners with, I would say, well, he might be complaining, certainly an end goal of, hey, you know, we might need you guys to suit up and write some checks too.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I took it. Basically, guys, I don't want to do this, but okay, let's have the greatest collective of all time. Let's go. You know, I mean, it's basically a fundraiser.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest complaint that I've heard from coaches over the last few months, and I think this is actually fair, and I think it speaks to the sort of ineptitude of all of the legislative issues at the national level from the NCAA. So nobody knows what the rules actually are. There is an interim policy, and they added some guidelines to it, but these collectives that are very, very aggressive, like we've seen, obviously Tennessee in that mix, you know, Oregon in that mix, Miami has been very public about their situation. These collectives that are very public and very aggressive that are doing things that a lot of people believe are recruiting inducements, you know, they feel pretty confident that they're not going to be punished for this, but there's a lot of places that aren't comfortable embracing that. And they don't know, well, you know, what exactly can we do or can we not do? And they're looking to the NCAA for guidance, and the NCAA is kind of shrugging. And so people, you know, there's just, I think there's, for a lot of coaches, they want to have clarity and know, what can we do? What can we not do? What will we get in trouble for? What will the punishments be? Right now, there are no clear answers to all those questions. There's a lot of people in the business who feel like none of this is going to happen. None of this is going to, there's not going to be a reckoning coming. I generally agree with that. They can talk a big game about, well, we may, you know, Gene Smith has come out and said, we may face lawsuits. I think you're going to lose count of lawsuits if you try to pass some sort of legislation that ultimately blocks a lot of people from collecting checks that people want to give to them. So I think generally the landing spot will be more on where the aggressive collectives are. But right now they're just in a weird spot and not everybody's comfortable, you know, with collectives talking to recruits who aren't on campus and being pretty explicit about how much money they can make. I think people have to rewire their brains and not buy into the idea that that is a bad thing or an immoral thing, but the rules aren't clear, and that, I think, is a very true thing. I think that is sort of the crux of a lot of this debate.
Well, and David, I know just from the Tennessee perspective, because obviously, I mean, you have written more about collectives, I think, than anyone in college football media, and certainly about Spire Sports in Knoxville. And I know that some Tennessee fans are worried, oh, someone's going to be made an example of, and then maybe people will change, and you can't do sweeping things, but one program will get popped, and of course it'll be Tennessee. What I just can't like I agree with everything you just said, and also beyond that, I just can't wrap my head around some kind of retroactive punishment when, you know, when there was nothing in place. What would you say to the Tennessee fan who worries about that?
Well, I think if I was, you know, a player who was being paid by Spire or I was Spire, I'd be a little bit more nervous than I was 4 months ago. But I think ultimately where I land on is this, and I've talked to a lot of people in the collective space about this. When you look at NCAA rules and NCAA rule violations previously, there's not a lot of interpretation. Did you contact this recruit when you weren't allowed? That's an explicit question, yes or no. It's a bit, you know, like, you know, are you pregnant? There's not, you can't be kind of pregnant, right? You either contacted them or you didn't. We have the phone records to prove it. Did you pay this person? Yes or no? There's not an interpretation in there, okay? So then when you start talking about what is a recruiting inducement, did you induce this recruit? Well, for the first time, you're asking the NCAA, in its infinite wisdom, to interpret one of its rules. That is not explicit. What is a recruiting inducement, okay? And especially when you have in a legal document saying this is not a recruiting inducement. Now, certainly, there's an element of, well, okay, it's in a legal document, but, you know, it looks like a recruiting inducement. You know, it smells like a recruiting inducement. All of these factors, okay? Do you want to tell me it's a recruiting inducement? I'd say probably yes. It probably is. I understand why coaches are frustrated about this. It's probably violating the spirit of what they envision name, image, and likeness to be. But you can't legislate and punish based on why you think someone did something. Did a recruit come to Tennessee because of the money, or did they like a lot of the other things about Tennessee and the money came also? There's a level of interpretation there that you, if you're going to start levying punishments, they say they're not going to punish the kids, which we'll see. You know, they're talking about punishing coaches a little bit more. And the coaches are responsible for kind of reining in these collectives or banning contact, or we'll see what that ultimately looks like when this settles down a little bit. But that is why I really don't think that there is a reckoning coming, because the rule that they're trying to enforce is kind of unenforceable, because you can't prove why someone did something unless they want to say, yes, this was a recruiting inducement. I would like to have everyone that has helped me benefit punished. Like, that's just not something that somebody's going to do. So that is why this is so much stickier than in the previous era, because in the previous era of NCAA enforcement, you know, even the Jeremy Pruitt scandal, there's not a lot of interpretation, right? It's did they get money or did they not? But a recruiting inducement is so amorphous and so hard to pin down, and that is what a lot of these aggressive collectives understand and why they're leaning so hard, because you can't prove what an inducement is, especially when you're trying to levy a punishment about it.
David Uppen from The Athletic on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, David, going back to the Jimbo Saban saga, what did you make of Jimbo's version of the press conference and how personal that he made it between him and Saban?
Well, I've talked to some people. You know, this has been simmering for a while. We had a story about it last week as well. But this has kind of been, you know, a lot of coaches have heard some things in recent months behind the scenes, sort of, that there was some bad blood, that Saban, you know, took exception to Texas A&M having, you know, the number one class and 7 5 stars, one of the best recruiting classes in the country. And I think that, you know, when you talk about buying players, well, that's not explicitly illegal. And, you know, certainly Jimbo seems to take offense to the idea that he's cheating. I think cheating is a generous interpretation of what Texas A&M did or did not. And, of course, we had Jimbo, you know, what, over the weekend, talk about how only one of the 11 early enrollees had NIL deals. We'll see about the rest of the class, ultimately. You know, A&M was writing some checks. That's just what was happening. Now, was that good or bad or whatever? You know, certainly I would say societal good. Was it a running afoul of the rules? I think you know, a lot of people have compared this to speeding. I think that's probably about right. So it's, you know, I think there's a lot of this tied up in when you talk about Jimbo's reaction to, you know, an ego situation where, you know, I've talked with Ari Wasserman, one of our recruiting writers, about this a lot, is that In the collective era, how do you assess how good a coach is at recruiting now? Because Jimbo certainly wants credit for this historic class and beating Nick Saban. But, you know, when you factor in money, not to confuse the cheating, non-cheating sort of thing, but it's a bit like he corked his bat, right? It's a little bit of an aid. Well, Jimbo takes offense to the idea that, well, we got this class not because of my recruiting prowess, but because of the money factor. Well, these coaches, you know, I don't know if you guys have talked to a college football coach in a while. They have some egos on them, right? So I think there's probably some hurt feelings there in that, well, you want to think, like, I didn't do this. I think he takes offense to that. I personally think the entire Texas A&M ecosystem should be patting itself on the back for building and executing an infrastructure that can get you the best recruiting class in the history of college football. And I don't think that that's something to, you know, be ashamed of. It's a pride point, especially when they start winning some ball games. I don't think anybody's going to care.
Yeah, I must say, David, our Slack channel in the college football Slack channel sometimes gives me some great content, including this TV interview Jimbo had. So I asked this question. I ask you, is there actually our Andy Staples actually debunked a lot of this, you know, and did as much deep reporting on Texas A&M as you could do. Is there actually a traditional media outlet that is run with this stuff, or is Jimbo and Saban both just completely out to lunch on that?
Well, that's sort of a complicated question, right? So, no. The short answer is no. There's not been a lot of people that are active in college football media that actually cover this on a frequent basis that have run with this quote-unquote $30 million number. The $30 million number is fantasy. Did A&M certainly have a fund? Yes, they obviously did. Andy Staples wrote about this. The numbers are a little bit iffy, but it was not $30 million. I can guarantee it was not $30 million. Somewhere in the millions, but not $30 million. But on the flip side of that, that $30 million number that the now infamous Sliced Bread, who I think he's getting a special place in SEC folklore at this point. With as much as Jimbo has invoked our man Sliced Bread, that got carried around by a lot of people. You know, coaches have cited it. We had a Notre Dame official, I forget exactly who it was, tweeted it out. It was kind of like, I can't remember what he tweeted with it, but it was like the equivalent of an eyes emoji. There's a lot of people that should know better that ran with this essentially what was a message board rumor being aggregated onto a clickbait site that a lot of people ran with because they wanted to believe that it was true and couldn't buy into the idea that, oh, A&M is, you know, doing a good job recruiting. Well, it's only because of this $30 million number that was fantasy. So it never really held up. $30 million, when you think about how much money that is for a class of 25 kids, I mean, that's just not realistic in 2022. Maybe it will be in 2030, but it's not right now. So, you know, I get where they're coming from because a lot of people ran with that, and it wasn't necessarily a media thing. I'm sure there were a couple people, you know, in the media that tweeted it out and acted like it was true. Nobody from our site did, I don't think, and nobody from, you know, the people that cover this sport, the ESPNs, the Yahoos, the Sports Illustrated, and all these other places that do good work. So, quote-unquote, the media, I'm making giant air quotes right now, I guess you could say, ran with it in some ways, but not the people that are serious about trying to do good work. So, you know, if you want to find something that somebody wrote or did that you disagree with or ran with some sort of fake story, then that's probably true. You can probably find that, but, you know, the media is not a conglomerate, and you should pay attention to the people that cover the sport frequently and consistently and try to do good work. And if you do that and you've read us or you've read anyone it's written about A&M, you'd know that $30 million number is not reality.
God bless college football.
That's right. David Ubbin from The Athletic, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Row. David, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to join us this morning.
Hey. Thank you.
David, before you go, I saw the crib. It looks like a very nice job of construction. Baby watch is high alert. We're DEFCON 1 right now?
We are DEFCON 1. It isn't any time situation. So the go bag is packed. We're sitting here. I've got 2 days left before I'm leaving for paternity leave. So we are Boy, it's here, man. So we'll see how it goes.
And sliced bread is not one of the possible names?
Well, it's the middle name. We went with sliced bread.
David, thank awesome. You. We appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
Anytime. Good luck, buddy.
All right. We'll come back. We'll take your thoughts to what David Ubbin had to say there, 615-737-1025. Attention, men. Have you been struggling with erectile dysfunction? Well, Hillside Medical Clinic has a breakthrough treatment for ED that does not require any pills, injections, or surgery. And right now, Andrew joins me to tell us all about it. Andrew, what's going on?
Hello there. That's right. No guy, from what I can tell, wants to take the pill for erectile dysfunction. Guys, you know what I'm talking about, all those headaches, the lack of spontaneity. Hillside Medical Clinic has helped so many men get rid of that pill. We use a technology called wave therapy. With just a few 10-minute sessions, pressure waves can repair and open up the blood vessels. In fact, enough that we can get rid of the ED. We've done exactly that for so many men who want to improve in the bedroom or want to eliminate the erectile dysfunction completely without the use of pills.
So, Andrew, what kinds of clinical studies have been done on this new technology?
It is extensive. If you go to hillsidemedicalclinic.com, we have 60 clinical studies all over the world, Europe, Canada, the U.S. colleges, universities have vetted this, and it was even called the new standard of care for erectile dysfunction.
And Andrew, you've got a special offer if our listeners call in right now.
We do. We believe in delivering a lot of value. Maybe you have questions. Maybe you're not sure what to do. But if you're struggling with ED and you're ready to regain your love life, grab your phone, call us now. We'll set you up with the assessment, exam, and blood flow ultrasound, no charge. You'll get a gift for coming in that produces immediate results in the bedroom. You'll love that, trust me. Worth hundreds of dollars, it's free to callers now.
You heard it, guys. Put a stop to your erectile dysfunction by treating the root cause of the problem. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now to qualify for that offer at 615-576-5000. That's 615-576-5000. Put a stop to your ED and regain your love life. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now at 615-576-5000.
And you've read about them. You know who they are. I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team. Made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right? We didn't buy one player. All right? But I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it.
You ever been to a game here? You ever come to school here and see the education? You ever talk about the 12th man, the Aggie Network, when you're done? There ain't a better university in this country. And it's insulting to what you say. And all these, and we got writers who have said it and done it. Off sliced bread. A guy named Sly who made it up. Love to see who sliced bread is and put it out there with sliced bread. Let me find out where it comes from. And then to have coaches in our league and across this league to say it, clown acts. All right? Irresponsible as hell. Multiple coaches in our league. And the guys griping about NIL, griping about transfer portal, using it the most and bragging about it the most. That's the ironic part. You want character? I'll take it with any of y'all. It's a joke. It does piss me off.
You know, Joe, I thought that was going to be the greatest press conference moment of the year from Jimbo Fisher, but it turns out that was just the appetizer to a beautiful main course that we've seen played out over the course of the past few days here.
Yeah, and now he's got the after-dinner drinks and maybe needs to get a cab home. But, hey, you know, do your thing, man.
Just incredible. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Nate on the text line says, Willie and Chase, we're talking about the collective money drawing up. I think it could be sooner than anyone thinks. Right now, donors can write off these university donations, but I bet soon they'll be considered sponsors like a company, and the money won't be able to be written off like a donation to the university, and more people will be hesitant to give a lot of money to the collectives. This is coming from Nate on the text line.
And I'll read my response. HMMM. Maybe in some cases, but a lot of the same people have contributed to funds that haven't been written off because they're completely under the table, and the most rich and powerful boosters of college football programs typically are willing to spend a lot of money to win. But I, look, there have been different stories out there about various collectives, you know, maybe not having as much as they expected to have and things like that. So it's really interesting. And then it just feels like it's kind of a limbo time period right now, because are they actually, like, everything Ubben said, and Ubben knows more about collectives, I would wager, than anybody out there. He's really dug in on collectives. I don't know if there's going to be any kind of actual guardrails, or if you can. He explained pretty well why it would be so difficult for that to be the case. You know, like, what would that even mean? You're going to try to, like, we're going to have a salary cap in college football? Like, someone's like, Gordon from Nashville, the cap is real, except in college football. And there's no salary cap in the coach salaries, which are just continue to go nuts. I don't know what the guardrails would be, but it's clear that there are a lot of people upset about this in the sport, a lot of people with a lot of influence, and that they're trying to figure out some way to contain this. I still think that, to me, the money shouldn't be contained at all. That's just my stance. I've been that way the whole way. Haven't changed a bit. Not surprised that people are getting paid to go to various schools. But I do think that some of the overall craziness could actually be contained by these collectives, because if you have legal agreements in place where you are, like, you getting this money only if you stay in the school, maybe at least the movement settles down a little bit. Again, though, another thing about all this is we're still talking about a small percentage of the players who play college football. Most of them aren't going to get anything up front, and maybe they'll get a nice, you know, car wash deal for being, you know, a solid left guard at Purdue. You know, I mean, most of them aren't getting these big deals. This is about the absolute top superstar players. And I know there was like the 3-star defensive tackle who reportedly got a big deal. But for the most part, we're talking about the upper crust of players that everybody is trying to get to their programs.
Coming up next, we'll get back into the Tennessee Vols, look at their path in baseball to a national championship. And Joe Rexroad will throw out a fascinating question about how much this fan base has embraced this team, including could it be even more competitive than football in terms of how the fan base responds to the way that this team performs over the course of the next couple of weeks into the postseason. All that coming up next. Let me tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. Go yard all May long with $5 Dinger Tuesdays on FanDuel Sportsbook. This season, all customers will get $5 for every home run hit by both teams when you place a $25 to hit a home run wager on Tuesday MLB games. And the best part about Dinger Tuesdays is even if your bet loses, FanDuel will pay you $5 for every single home run. I like Anthony Rizzo of the New York Yankees. You got the short porch that you're dealing with in New York, and he's been playing really well so far this season. But you take it any way you want to take it. What are you waiting on? Just pick your home run hitter and turn big swings into big wins. There's no better place to bet America's pastime than on America's number one sportsbook. Head on over to your FanDuel account or download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up using promo code ROB. Once again, that promo code is ROB. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. A max bonus of $25. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning. I got some tickets to give away to see Kenny Chesney coming up at Nissan Stadium this Saturday. Be caller number 5 at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Kenny Chesney coming up at Nissan Stadium this Saturday. So looking forward to that. Right now, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. So postseason baseball about to begin. Joe Rexroad, Vanderbilt in action coming up today. We'll talk to Gentry Estes from the Tennessean coming up at 9 o'clock. Tennessee in action in the SEC tournament tomorrow. And then you'll have the regionals and the super regionals. And before we know it, the College World Series will be here. Lots of expectations for this Tennessee baseball team. They were 49-7 throughout the regular season. One of the best seasons that we've ever seen in the history of college baseball. And some people are asking the question, if Tennessee finishes this off, could they be the best college baseball team of all time? Now, some season awards came out yesterday. Tony Vitello got named Coach of the Year. There are Vols up and down the All-SEC baseball list, the All-Freshman baseball list. Obviously, Tennessee leading the categories in the SEC and pretty much everything that you want to talk about here. So lots of expectations heading into this group. You asked this question earlier, and I think it's a really interesting question. Does this Tennessee baseball team, as constructed right now, are they the team in Tennessee with the best chance to win a major title? We talked about the Grizzlies earlier in the show. The Titans were the number one seed in the AFC last year. Tennessee is the number one team in the country right now in college baseball. Do you believe this Tennessee baseball team has the best chances in the state to win a major title?
Yes, I think for sure right now. And I think most years, I'd say in a lot of years, you know, you could look at like the Preds in 17-18 after the Stanley Cup final run. You could look at, before that, some Lady Vols going back a bit. But for the most part, I think Vanderbilt baseball is usually the answer to that question. Now, Tennessee baseball is.
Yep. No, I think that's definitely something that's definitely shifted there. Now, Vanderbilt baseball heading into the season had a lot of expectations surrounded to it, and that has changed with the way the season has played out from some. Now, we'll see what they're able to do come, you know, postseason baseball here. But it's one of those things where I think this team with the fan base in Tennessee has basically turned into national championship or bust, and that's a good spot to be in as a program. Now, as we had somebody point this out in our text line earlier, if you do get back to the College World Series in Omaha, I mean, it's one of those things where it's a big park. Tennessee hits a lot of home runs. Can they hit home runs with that enough or with enough regularity in Omaha to be effective offensively? But, Joe, you pointed this out too. Really, the offense is a big story for Tennessee. I think the biggest story for Tennessee baseball and Tony Vitello this year has been the pitching. Like, the pitching has been dominant, and that's what – I feel way better about with this group this year than I did last year in terms of not only the pitchers themselves, but just the depth that they have there. They've got some guys that can start, you know, Drew Beam, obviously Dolander. They've got Blake Tidwell. Ben Joyce is in there throwing the ball 105 miles an hour. The pitching is really, really good for this Vols team.
I mean, the pitching is why I wasn't sure they'd be able to follow up on last year, you know, successfully. You knew the lineup was going to be loaded with guys like Gilbert and Lipsius and Russell back and some of the young kids who have, you know, some of the young kids who have come on. But basically it was like, okay, Blake Tidwell, you lost your other weekend starters, you know. Chase Burns, yes, big recruit, so that could be really good. But, yeah, I mean, Dolander and Beam have just been incredible. I mean, you're talking about 16-1 combined. 2.73 ERA for Beam, 2.3 for Dolander. Across the board, their numbers are ridiculous. 90 strikeouts to 9 walks for Dolander. I mean, a 1.58 average against Beam, 1.84 average against. They led the SEC in like everything: pitching, hitting, fielding. So this is not just some one-dimensional masher team. I mean, yes, it certainly they rely on that with their offense, and that's a fair point on Omaha. But when you pitch like this, you can win anywhere.
Joe, you threw out an interesting question earlier as it relates to Tennessee baseball and the chances for this team, and then what football has the opportunity to do coming up in the fall. Set up that question again for our listeners.
Yes. So the two questions I have. One is, what percentage of the massive UT fan base is really invested in this team? You know, for people who want to argue that college baseball isn't a major title, I would argue against that. I think college World Series, perfectly placed to get max attention. And, you know, I think around here, college baseball is a big deal, whether UT is good or not. But I still wonder what percentage of that massive fan base is really invested in this team, wants to read about the team, watches a lot of the games, you know, follows along with recruiting, you know, things like that. And then also, if you are a UT fan who follows along, because I'm just assuming everyone's into football, right? I mean, if you're a UT fan, I mean, how many people are like a UT fan but not in football? I guess some people might try to do that. Like, I'm a UT fan of everything but football.
That may have served you well over the course of the past decade or so.
But here's the question. Would you take a baseball natty right now? You have this in your hand. You can grab one of these things, a baseball national championship for this team, or a 10-2 record next fall with including a win over Florida.
That's an interesting question. There was a time not that long ago where my answer absolutely would have been football. Give me 10-2 football, give me a win against Florida, and see where that puts yourself after that. Now, as people have pointed out in the text line, if you go 10-2, you're probably losing to Alabama and Georgia, and it probably is not resulting in a trip to Atlanta for the SEC title game.
Yep.
So there is that to think about. Now,
anything better than 10-2, that's an easy choice, right?
Right. Well, I mean, I would think so, but it's interesting. Like, I think I'm going baseball national title. And I think I said this earlier. I think that speaks to the job that Tony Vitello has done beyond just the on the field stuff, because it's easy, you know, when they play as well on the field as they played this year, it's easy to get bought into a winner. But I think with this team, it goes deeper than just that. Like, I think it goes deeper than just winning the game. I think people love Tony Vitello. I think he is the most popular coach at Tennessee right now. I think that this fan base is just really gravitated towards him and his personality and his moxie and everything that he brings to the table. And honestly, I think that Tennessee fans kind of enjoy being the villain of college baseball, and that's absolutely what they are right now. I mean, other teams in the SEC really don't like these guys, and they've kind of played that up well. I think there's a big portion of the Tennessee fan base that really enjoys that and really enjoys being that villain. So beyond just the pure win-loss result this year, I think what Tony Vitello has built here goes a little bit deeper than just that with this fan base.
No, I agree. I mean, if this was just a really, really good baseball team, you'd still have a lot of support, a lot of attention. I think they'd still be packing Lindsey Nelson and all that stuff. But, I mean, look, so much of SEC football or just SEC sports is also like the fan bases going at each other, right? I mean, And I feel like it just means more in the SEC in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it does.
But I feel like, although it's close, I mean, like Big Ten, it's close. I was going to say, I feel like the SEC is a different level of fan sniping / hatred for one program, you know. It's pretty strong in the Big Ten too, depending on who you're talking about. But I think it's probably number one here. And that's, I think, part of the, like you said, the attraction for UT fans is how long has it been that they've had to eat dust in the football realm, you know? You sitting there, I mean, you've talked about the last time you remember as a lad watching, you know, Tennessee beat Alabama in football. You know?
06.
Yeah. I mean, so it's just been misery, like, especially having to hear about it. And you have these momentary glimpses of hope and all that. But now for everyone in a particular sport to be hating you like that and to eat your dust. So I think that's wrapped up in all this too is, well, look, I mean, if you want to take it to Vanderbilt, I mean, baseball has been the source of pride, that fan base. I mean, obviously, you know, football, I mean, it's, you know, we're talking about a century, okay, since they were any kind of like contender for anything really. And they used to, you know, basketball had its ups and downs, been downstretch. I mean, but that can be good. But baseball has been consistently excellent, elite for a long time. And so they, like, that's the point of pride. And I don't think that's going to happen at Tennessee because I think their other sports are going to be, I mean, I think they're probably as healthy as they've been overall for a long time right now. But baseball being elite, having a chance to win it all, and then also you tick people off with your celebrations and everything, there's a lot of appeal there.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. What do you think of the question that Rex Rowe threw out there? Would you rather take the national title in baseball with this team, or would you rather the football team go 10-2 and win against Florida coming up this fall? 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game.
Well, look, if you want to take it to Vanderbilt, baseball has been the source of pride. That fan base, obviously, football, it's, we're talking about a century, okay, since they were any kind of like contender for anything, really. And they used to, basketball has been, had its ups and downs, been downstretch, but that can be good. But baseball has been consistently excellent, elite for a long time. And so they, that's the point of pride. And I don't think that's going to happen at Tennessee, because I think their other sports are going to be, I think they're probably as healthy as they've been overall for a long time right now. But baseball being elite, having a chance to win it all, and then also you tick people off with your celebrations and everything, there's a lot of appeal there.
Taking your thoughts on the Vols at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad has thrown it out there. Would you rather have the Vols win a national championship in baseball, or would you rather them go 10-2 coming up in the fall in football and win against Florida as well? Take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Gary texting in says, I'm a huge Tennessee football fan, but anything less than an SEC championship in football, I'd go with baseball national title. So anything less than an SEC title in football, Gary's going with the baseball national title.
Okay. I think you brought up the point earlier. Timing of year asked this question is probably relevant, right? If you ask this question, if you went back to the fall, not that Heupel's first season really, Heupel's first season was overachieving, but if you went to the beginning, of a football season or August or something and asked a question like this when everyone's geared up for football, then maybe it's a different answer. But right now, everybody's swept up in baseball. Swimming Totoro on Twitter says, baseball school in all caps.
Yes. Yes.
Because they can't win school. Anything else.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow. Michelle Perry getting her shots in.
Yes, the school that lost to Tennessee in both football and basketball.
Oh, my goodness.
Else. Heidi from Dixon on the text line says, I'll take the 10-2 because baseball is more sustainable after this year. Football might get impatient and change coaches and start over again in 2 years. Baseball can keep on trucking by just being decent at worst. That's coming from Heidi from Dixon.
Okay, but if football goes 10-2 this year, well, if that happens, of course, then what does that mean? Well, it probably means, one, that Hendon Hooker has a ridiculously good year, which I could see happening. Yep. For sure. And it also probably means that this class, which as of last I looked, was seventh in the 24/7 composite, gets continued momentum because, let's take this to what David Ubben was talking about, which is a great conversation with Ari Wasserman just about the whole – coaches get evaluated on recruiting. So if this is just going to be all this, then do you evaluate them differently? And again, I say, there are some players who they're just going to be bidding wars, and there are players who have been subject to bidding wars also in the past. But you're still making your decision if you're a member of a roster, if you're 85% of a roster, to me, maybe not that high for some of the elite schools, but you're making the decision based on the school, you're based on the coaches, based on NFL development, based on winning too. People want to win championships too. So all of that to say, if they go 10-2, then I think that recruiting gets another boost. They get more momentum, and then maybe they can build on that. We'll see with Josh Heupel. I don't know if he's gonna really get it where Tennessee fans want it, but a 10-2 season in second year, would, and the biggest bowl game, that would guarantee the biggest bowl game for Tennessee since the 1999 season. I think I'd want to see where that led.
Well, just imagine in 2023 when it's Nico and Joe Milton alternating series out there every game too.
You
start off with Joe Milton, and then Nico comes in second series, and they just go back and forth the whole year.
You joke.
It'll be like Tannehill and Malik Willis in 2023.
Yeah.
That's right. Get in all your Malik Willis – or not Malik Willis. Get in all your Joe Milton jokes. Get them all out of your system. I still think Joe Milton could be a really good quarterback.
I mean, the good news for him is he could stand on the 50-yard line, and he could probably hit Tony Vitello at Lindsey Nelson Stadium with the ball. So – he's definitely got the arm strength part of it down.
Imagine if he
should be the pitcher.
Well, I was going to say, imagine if he was throwing a baseball.
Yeah.
He'd throw that sucker to Sevierville. Did I say that right?
No, you didn't.
Sevierville. God dang it.
Sevierville.
Oh, I said Sevierville. God, and I've worked on that too. I've worked on it too, and I totally botched it. Ah, I knew it was Sevierville.
Just brutal.
Words are hard.
Not Tom Sevierville. Yes, words are hard.
Chris on the text line from Atlanta says, to me, it's simple. The Vols last won a football title in 98. Last time the base Vols were in the national title game was 1951. Give me the base Vols to win the title. It's coming from Chris from Atlanta.
Okay. Should I do a poll?
There's a lot of votes for baseball here.
The problem with doing a poll question on this is that then, like, Vandy fans will spoil it. It's like whenever you do anything, you know, or the same thing, if you did something with Vanderbilt, Tennessee fans would get in there and, you know, do something to mess it up. So I probably won't do it. But, yeah, we've got a lot more baseball today.
Well, doesn't this kind of tell you, though, like, there are some people, like, that have texted in and be like, why would you even ask this question? You'll take the national title. Because it's football. That's why you ask this question. Because it's Tennessee football. I mean, it's really not close in terms of the popularity of that team and the other sports around the program. I mean, it's college football in America. It's king when it comes to college sports. So we understand all that. But this goes back to what I was talking about. Like, I think that people and Tennessee fans have really connected with this baseball team because they are so starved for a winner that they feel like this is a chance to get one. Now, as got pointed out to us earlier on the text line, I think Tennessee fans are also setting themselves up for a really potentially nasty stomp on the heart, too, if something goes wrong in regionals or super regionals. But that's the price you pay when you're a good team and you're invested. And I don't think there's any question about it. Tennessee's fans are invested in this baseball program.
Yep. Mike from Clarksville, any chance you have to grab a championship, you go for the championship. And I hear that. But like you just said, I mean, football, there have to be a lot of people. I mean, there have to be people who don't pay a lot of attention to baseball who are all in on Tennessee football, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I tell you, that's where it's interesting. I do feel like traditional, again, all I can go by is, well, interactions with people here. You got Twitter. You got real-life conversations with Tennessee fans. I don't know, like, I don't really know anybody who's not into the baseball team. I mean, there have to be people, right?
I mean, I would think so, but to your point, like, I've known diehard Tennessee fans my entire life who care about basically the football program and that's it. I mean, even when Tennessee had Bruce Pearl, they paid attention every now and then, but it was basically like, okay, so what's going on in recruiting with the football team? Like, that's how these people operate. And even some of those guys that I know, I saw them a few weeks ago. They're talking about Tennessee baseball. Like, they're like, who's pitching tonight? Who's going to be in the rotation come regional? Like, it's pretty incredible to watch how this team has grabbed a hold of the fan base. Now, I'm interested to see what Danny White and the administration does to build on that facility as they move forward here, because that's going to be the next step is getting your baseball facilities to a place where they need to be. But I think this momentum for Tennessee baseball is sustainable as they move forward here with the fan base.
Yeah, well, I think so too. And you know, and I agree with what Heidi says about just the program. I mean, it's going to be interesting. And then not just their ability to sustain and keep building on this, but like, does that have any impact on Vanderbilt? I think they can coexist, but if there is there a little bit of a seesaw effect? I mean, usually when you have two major programs in the same sport in the same state who are league rivals, like if one of them comes from way back and all of a sudden is right there with the program that's been there for a long time, usually that takes a little bit away from the established power. I mean, they do recruit some of the same kids, and this state is a good baseball state. So I wonder that too. Is this threatening? Because right now I look at Vanderbilt, look at the recruiting, everything. Yep, they're good. You know,
going right along. Yep.
Yeah, but I don't know. Can they coexist? Can this be like a both of them threatening Omaha year after year after year, or is there some kind of a diminishing effect on Vanderbilt? I mean, Vanderbilt fans, I know, are already sick of all of this Tennessee baseball stuff and do not want to consider that possibility.
Well, they're worried about Tennessee's bats, too. Got to take a look at those.
Ah, you brought up the bats. That's right. I mean, it's been a good –
You should know more about college baseball bats than anybody in the country with the amount of work you did on it that weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they wouldn't let me inspect the bat. I tried.
I'm sure that you did. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. We'll get his thoughts on Vols and Vandy baseball as they head into postseason play. Also, the Titans on the field today as well. All that ahead, you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.